Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
In the seventh canto, chapter number 2, text number 10. The chapter is entitled Hiranyakasipu, the King of the Demons. King of the Demons. Tavad. Tavad yatta bhuvam yuyam brahmachatra samheritam sudayadvam tapoyagya svadhyaya vratadanina. Support by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. While I am engaged in the business of killing Lord Vishnu, go down to the planet Earth, which is flourishing due to Brahminical culture and a Kshatriya government. These people engaged in austerity, sacrifice, Vedic study, regulative vows, and charity destroy all the people thus engaged. This is Hiranyakasipu. He's gathered together with his friends of and worshipers and associates, these demons, and he's giving them instructions now. Go down and destroy the brahmanas and the Vedic culture while he kills Lord Vishnu. So purport by Srila Prabhupada. Hiranyakasipu's main purpose was to disturb the demigods. He planned first to kill Lord Vishnu so that Lord Vishnu's death so that with Lord Vishnu's death, the demigods would automatically weaken and die. Another of his plans was to disturb the residents of the planet Earth. The peace and prosperity of the residents of Earth and all the other planets were maintained by the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 4:13, Chaturvarnya maya shrishtam gunakarma vibhagashaha. According to the three modes of material nature and the work ascribed to them, the four divisions of human society were created by me. On all the planets, there are different types of residents, but the Lord recommends referring especially to the planet Earth, which is inhabited by human beings. That society be divided into four varnas, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. But the advent of Lord Krishna on this earth, it is understood that the earth was managed by the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. The duty of the Brahmanas is to cultivate sama, peacefulness, dhamma, self-control, titiksha, tolerance, satyam, truthfulness, socham, cleanliness, and arjavam, simplicity. And then to advise the Kshatriya kings how to rule the country or planet. Following the instructions of the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas should engage the populace in austerity, sacrifices, Vedic study, and adherence to the rules and regulations established by Vedic principles. They should also arrange for charity to be given to the Brahmanas, sannyasis, and temples. This is the godly arrangement of the Brahminical culture. People are inclined to offer yajna because unless sacrifices are offered, there will be insufficient rain. Yajñād bhavati parjanya, which will hamper agricultural activities. Parjanyād anasambhava. By introducing Brahminical culture, therefore, a Kshatriya government should engage people in performing yajna, studying the Vedas, and giving charity. Thus, the people will receive their necessities for life very easily, and there will be no disturbances in society. In this regard, Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 3:12, Ishtan bogam hi vo deva dasyante jagya bhavitaha tair datan apradhayaibhyo yo bhukte stena eva saha. In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna, sacrifice, supply all necessities to man. But he who enjoys these gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. The demigods are authorized supplying agents who act on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. Therefore, they must be satisfied by the performance of prescribed yajnas. In the Vedas, there are different kinds of yajnas prescribed for different kinds of demigods, but all are ultimately offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For one who cannot understand what the Personality of Godhead is, sacrifice to the demigods is recommended. It's a very important statement right there, isn't it? I'll read it again. For one who cannot understand what the Personality of Godhead is, sacrifice to the demigods is recommended. According to the different material qualities of the persons concerned, different types of yajnas are recommended in the Vedas. Worship of different demigods is also on the same basis, namely according to the different qualities. For example, the meat eaters are recommended to worship the goddess Kali, the ghastly form of material nature. And before the goddess, the sacrifice of animal is recommended. But for those in a mode of goodness, the transcendental worship of Vishnu is recommended. Ultimately, all yajnas are meant for the gradual promotion to the transcendental position. For ordinary men, at least 5 yajnas, known as the Pancha Mahayajna, are necessary. One should know, however, that all the necessities of life that human society requires are supplied by the demigod agents of the Lord. No one can manufacture anything. Consider, for example, all the edibles of human society. These edibles include grains, fruits, vegetables, milk, and sugar for persons in the mode of goodness, and also edibles for non-vegetarians such as meats, none of which can be manufactured by men. Then again, take, for example, heat, light, water, and air, which are all necessities of life. None of them can be manufactured by any human society. Isn't it? It's a long purport. Without the Supreme Lord, there can be no profuse sunlight, moonlight, rainfall, or breeze, without which no one can live. Obviously, our life is dependent on the supplies from the Lord. Even for our manufacturing enterprises, we require so many raw materials like metal, sulfur, mercury, manganese, and so many essentials, all of which are supplied by the agents of the Lord, with the purpose that we should make proper use of them to keep ourselves fit and healthy for the purpose of self-realization, leading to the ultimate goal of life, namely liberation from the material struggle for existence. This aim of life is attained by performance of yajnas. If we forget the purpose of human life and simply try to simply take supplies from the agents of the Lord for sense gratification and become more and more entangled in the material existence, which is not the purpose of creation, certainly we become thieves, and therefore we are punished by the laws of material nature. A society of thieves can never be happy, for they have no aim in life. The gross materialist thieves have no ultimate goal of life. They are simply directed to sense gratification, nor do they have knowledge of how to perform yajnas. Lord Chaitanya, however, inaugurated the easiest performance of yajna, namely the Sankirtan yajna, which can be performed by anyone in the world who accepts the principles of Krishna consciousness. Hiranyakasipu planned to kill the inhabitants of earth so that yajna would be stopped and the demigods being disturbed would die automatically when Lord Vishnu, the Jagyeshwara, was killed. These were the demoniac plans of Hiranyakasipu, who was expert in such activities. Of the Bhagavatam is very nice for this marathon month also. Each day we get an understanding more and more. Actually, when you read Srila Prabhupada's books, more and more and more you see in the purports, when as you become aware of it, that it he's talking about Sankirtan Yajna over and over and over, isn't it? It's like one of those obvious secrets. Like the Bhagavad Gita itself is an obvious secret. You know, it's called the secret of all secrets. And because the non-devotee of the Lord, he cannot see what the message of the Bhagavad Gita is to engage in the transcendental loving service of Krishna. He cannot see that. He'll even study the Bhagavad Gita, learn so many slokas, and still not be able to understand the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada's purports over and over throughout the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the Bhagavad Gita, they point to that very simple fact that persons who are endowed with sufficient intelligence in the age of Kali Yuga, they'll engage in the Sankirtan movement, isn't it? And so Prabhupada's talking like that. So I don't want to start at the end of the purport, I'll start at the beginning of the purport. I just get excited, you know, when you think of how simple our life really is in the age of Kali Yuga. In previous ages, it was very difficult. You had to have so much money and so much to do yajnas. You had to have so much ghee. You had to have so many things. Or you sit in meditation for so many years and cold and heat. And we don't have to do any of that. We simply have to go out. I was walking down the steps coming to the temple, and I saw the DNA newspaper lying at someone's door. And it said, chills, what did it say? Chills, ills, and pills as winter grips Bombay's polluted area. That was the headline. I just kept going down the steps, you know. But the material world here, I was talking to one devotee from Croatia yesterday, and he was talking, wow, is it always this hot here? And this is the grips of winter, you know. It says the grips of winter, you know, like that. So Bombay, you know, the material world is so different for everyone, every one of us. And that's what this purport talks about, how that the living entity, Krishna has created Chaturvarnya Maya Srishtam, that there's four orders of life because there's four classes of men, qualities of men. And due to their natures, they engage in differently according to their nature. So some of us, you know, we see this as very hot here. Some of us see it as very cold here. Some of us are confused by whether to put on a chadar or not put on a chadar. You know, it's like, should I shave my head? I'm sick right now. Should I shave my head or not shave my head because it's cold at night? You never know. Right? So we all perceive this world differently according to our natures. But an interesting thing, as we understand here, it says that the brahmanas, the kshatriyas, the vaishyas, and the sudras, brahmanas are supposed to cultivate these sama, dhamma, you know, tatiksha, this peacefulness, self-control, tolerance, truthfulness. Sometimes when we judge people, we look at people, we think, even especially devotees, we think, oh, look at him. He is not properly as a Brahmin. He is not so truthful or peaceful. Generally, it's peaceful. You know, if you're not sitting down chanting your rounds, you know, there's something wrong with you. Some devotees think like that, see, you know, that you got to get up and pay. He's not so peaceful. He must not be a Brahmin, you know. He doesn't have brahminical qualities. But, you know, these qualities, Prabhupada said all these qualities should be in society. You know, there's a whole list of qualities. But they're not in one person, you see. That's why Krishna created four orders of life. You know, truthfulness is there for the Brahmin. But for the Vaishya, he cannot be truthful all the time, isn't it? He sometimes has to lie. For you, I make no profit. You know he's lying, but he's telling you these lies. Sometimes he even works on the black market to make a profit. I have heard in India that you cannot make a profit without touching the black market in business. Some people say like that. So these qualities are there, but they're not in all one person. They're not all in one person. The Brahmana has certain qualities. The Kshatriya cannot be nonviolent like the Brahmana. You know, can you imagine a Kshatriya running up to the enemy and saying, "Oh, please, can you just go back home and relax?" And, you know, and the enemy's got his sword. He said, "You know, please, I'm offering my humble obeisance to you. Can you just kindly go back to your home and leave us alone?" The Kshatriya, they would walk all over him. They would crush him. So the quality, that quality of peacefulness, he has to come, or that tolerance. He's tolerant, but he's intolerant of one who is attacking the devotees, one who is breaking the principles of, like when Kali came. He was not very tolerant with Kali. We saw Parikshit Maharaj pulled his sword out, was going to kill him right on the spot. So the Kshatriya has to have this ability to kill, to fight. Kshatriya, Prabhupada said, is always ready to fight. At a moment's notice, he'll fight you. You know, if you read the Krishna book, you know, they're having marriage ceremonies. Wonderful, everyone is enjoying. And Balaram is knocking the teeth out of the king of Kalinga, and somebody, and then the other one, cutting off people's heads. You know, and Prabhupada said, this is common in the Kshatriya society. You know, now, in a Brahminical marriage, you wouldn't expect somebody to lose their head, isn't it? But in a Kshatriya society, there's a tendency, you know, it's a different mode. So we have these peaceful qualities, but they're in the Brahmins. They're not in the Kshatriyas. Prabhupada describes that, yes, they all have to be in society, but not in one person. They have to be divided into this Chaturvarnya Maya Srishtam. And then they're maintained, they're protected by the Kshatriyas. The Brahmanas, they create this environment, and the Kshatriya protects the environment, you see. So the Brahmana directs the Kshatriya how to act. He directs them how to act. And the Kshatriya then goes and carries out the order of the Brahmana to bring about a peaceful society where the children, the women, the cows, the elder, they're all protected. Religious principles are protected by the Kshatriya. Kshatriyas, they travel all around the kingdom. They're looking for a fight. They're just looking for a fight. See? That's their job. Sometimes you'll hear in America, you know, that the policeman is too cruel. That's his job sometimes. Certainly he can go overboard. But if a criminal pulls a gun on him, his job is to shoot the criminal. Finished. If the criminal is doing something to harm another citizen, he has to stop it. We know that these are not real Kshatriyas, so we know that sometimes they do heinous activities, you know. But we have to see that has to be their nature. We expect everyone, even the materialists, expect everyone to have these qualities of the Brahman. But the Kshatriya doesn't. Just like they go to war, and they're killing each other, strapping children with bombs and blowing up the warriors. You know, the kid comes up, "Oh, look, a little kid." You see? And then when the warrior gets angry and kills a bunch of those people, then they want to put that warrior up on charges. You see? So it's very confusing in Kali Yuga. Used to be you just took your instructions from your authority and followed the instruction. Now, no one has honor. On the battlefield, there were no children or women on the battlefield. Kshatriyas went out and fought. Family stayed at home, isn't it? Now they're taking the children and strapping them with bombs. Women are now suicide bombers, you know, so many. You don't know who's the enemy and who's not. Everything is upside down in Kali Yuga. So these positions, they're set up by Krishna so there can be order in society and society can be protected properly. Here it says that that the demigods, we offer sacrifice to the demigods. Prabhupada's describing here. excuse me. I've lost my voice about 6 months ago, and it comes and goes. And Prabhupada describes how the demigods are authorized supplying agents. They supply to the brahmanas and the kshatriyas and the society. They so that they should be offered some sacrifice. Like if you get something from the demigods and you offer something in return. So Prabhupada quotes this verse, Ishtan Boga, Hivo Deva. That the demigods, in charge of various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna, supply necessities of rain. But he who enjoys these gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. And Prabhupada in the purport describes how can a thief be peaceful? How can there be peace in a society of thieves? Because they have no ultimate goal. In the next verse, in 3:13, Jagna Shitashino Santo, Krishna describes how the santo, or the saintly person, actually, this was our mantra for the what we used to call the Christmas Marathon. We are now calling Prabhupada Marathon. In the West, we call it Christmas Marathon. And sometimes to get people to be friendly, because in America or in the West, there's this Santa Claus. And Santa Claus would come and bear gifts, and you know, they would exchange gifts. So sometimes devotees would dress like Santa Claus, and we would go out with bags of books and candy, and so Jagya Shitansino Santa. We had this Santa, you know, that it was authorized from the Bhagavad Gita, that the Santa was there, the saintly person would give. But what's being described here is that the devotee of the Lord, he will not take anything that is not first offered to the Lord. And by doing that, then he becomes also relieved of all sin. That someone who takes, for instance, foodstuffs without first offering it to the Lord, he is verily eating sin, that verse describes. So then Prabhupada in the purports of that verse talks about how that, here he says, how can the thieves be satisfied? And then he says, how can you have a peaceful society full of thieves and sinful people? Sinful people and thieves, they cannot be peaceful. They cannot be satisfied. You see? They cannot be satisfied. So people who are stealing from the Supreme Lord, or in this case, Prabhupada's talking about his deputed representatives, they're simply thieves and sinners. But we know one time, I think it was Sunday, I was talking about the when Krishna sent the children, the cowherd boys, to go beg from the brahmanas, and the brahmanas refused to give. Well, when Krishna was finished dealing with these brahmanas, he was a little concerned, because he looked around and he realized the cowherd men also were preparing to offer some yajna or sacrifice to the demigod Indra. You see? To the demigod Indra. And one of the purposes for Krishna's appearance was to establish pure love for him while he was here. You see? He wanted to establish that pure devotional service to him. And so he didn't want his devotees worshiping the demigods, because they become confused sometimes when they're worshiping the demigods, because they cannot recognize Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here we had the cowherd men. They were thinking, if we don't worship Indra, we won't get rain. And since we're Vaishyas, or agricultural class of people, we need the rain to satisfy the cows, to grow the grains. How can we perform our duty? So they were thinking, we need to offer this. Krishna says it's not necessary. It's not necessary. And they were saying, no, it is necessary. And he said, very submissively, didn't he? He asked his father, what is this sacrifice you're preparing? To whom is it for? And what is the purpose? What will be the results of this sacrifice? He was asking like that. He wanted to know. But his father thought, this child, he will not understand. He's only a small boy. He will not understand why we are doing this. But he persisted. He wanted to know, why are you doing this? So his father told him, we're worshiping Indra because he provides the rains, which provide the grains, which feeds the cows, which gives us milk, so many things. Our economy is based on this. But Krishna, he said, it's not necessary. Actually, we're more dependent on Govardhan. We're more dependent on Govardhan and the cows. Why don't we worship Govardhan and the cow? Why we should worship Indra? Indra is pouring rain even on the ocean, where the ocean doesn't need rain. He pours rain on the ocean. He's putting rain on the rocks. Rocks don't need rain. Let us worship Govardhan. Because Krishna was trying to establish in the heart of the devotees that all we have to do is depend on him. And if we depend on him, then everything else will be provided for us. You see? Everything else is provided for us. Isn't it? We know from the story, because Govardhan Puja just went by, and I know you're very expert in knowing these stories, and how that Krishna held the hill for 7 days, protected the inhabitants of Vrindavan from Indra's wrath. Because Indra became very angry. Actually, it appeared like Indra was performing like a demon, wasn't he? Even though he was a devotee of the Lord, he became puffed up by his power, his prestige. Like Daksha. Daksha was a devotee of the Lord, but he became puffed up when he saw the Vaishnav, Lord Shiva, that Shiva didn't properly respect him, so he cursed him in so many ways. Sometimes even devotees, we become confused about our relationship with Krishna, and we become puffed up in our position, and we forget who we are. Sometimes we think we're the ultimate temple commander, or the ultimate Sankirtan leader, or the ultimate temple president. But ultimately, we are simply the servant of the servant. Actually, when you take a position of temple commander, temple president, sannyasi, GBC, guru, you become the servant of more and more people you become the servant of. It's not that, I remember when I was in the military, everyone told me what to do. When I first was drafted into the military, everybody told me what to do because I had no ranking. I'm thinking, I want to become a sergeant really quick here because I'm only going to be here a couple of years, but I don't want everybody telling me what to do. So quickly I went through the ranks, I became a sergeant so that I could tell a few people what to do, and some people would leave me alone. See? So sometimes in devotional service we find ourselves trying to go up a corporate ladder. It's very dangerous. We want to get that position. We want to get our own little group of people that we tell what to do, or our own little position where we can guide. Because we all want some kind of position. But the greatest position we can have is servant of the servant of the servant, isn't it? But we don't see that as a great position. We were talking the other day how Prakasananda Saraswati, when he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sitting down by the place where you wash the feet, he was thinking, he must be depressed. What is your lamentation, he asked him. Because everyone wants to be in the big seat. This Mayavadi sannyasi, they want to be in charge. They want to be in the big chair. They want the notoriety. They want people bowing down. But the devotee of the Lord, he is not thinking like that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed how that the devotee of the Lord, he sits in a very humble position and he offers respects to everyone. When he came up, he even offered respects to all those Mayavadi sannyasis. So the devotee of the Lord, he wants to get into that lower position of the servant of the Lord. And what happens when he does that, he finds himself in the higher position. He'll find himself as the temple president because he has the qualities that one wants to follow. Even though he wants to pull himself back and he doesn't want to be in the spotlight, he's put in the spotlight because of his position. You look at the position of the guru, all of a sudden he's in the total spotlight. He can't even, walk from one room to another without all kinds of people bowing down or wanting to come and get his association, isn't it? Yet he's just wanting to be a humble devotee and serve his spiritual master. It's very difficult. You're put in the spotlight the more you try not to be in the spotlight. That's the devotee's dilemma, actually. And it's actually very difficult to be in these positions. It's difficult to become the temple president or temple authority or, you know, GBC or whatever your position as you advance, because more people are looking at you. And if you're not careful, because, you know, who else is looking at you? Maya. She's looking at you also. Wow, look at, he's advancing very quickly. Do you think he's qualified to get that close to Krishna? Is he qualified to be that close to Krishna? Let me check. Huh? Would you like a little money? No, thank you. Would you like, you know, a nice woman? No, thank you. How about a little power? Okay, maybe a little bit. You see? She's got her foot in the door. Maybe a little power. Maybe a little prestige. It's very dangerous. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Nadana, Najana, Nasundara, I don't want any of these things. I don't want any of these things. Maya said, No, thank you. What I want is this pure devotional service in my life, birth after birth. I don't even want liberation. But Maya's always checking because she's not going to let you get close to Krishna. She's also the devotee of Krishna. You cannot get close to Krishna if you're not qualified. So she'll offer you. And she knows you pretty well. She's been watching you now as you move up. Oh, wait a minute. Look at that guy. Hold on. And she makes some offering. And the offering is there. And we have the choice to take it or to reject it on behalf of serving Krishna. So the demigods, we see, sometimes even the demigods, even though they're representatives of Krishna, they become a little confused about their position. They become a little confused. Indra became confused. Brahma became confused. How can this boy with this yogurt dripping through his hands be the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Let me just take a few of these calves, and then I'll take a few of these boys. Maybe I'm making a mistake here. What if he is? And when he turned around, the Lord had already manifested himself again as calves, and again as cowherd boys. Brahma, just for that brief moment, he was a little confused. But their saving grace is that they were great devotees of the Lord. They immediately surrendered to the Lord. Indra also, we saw how he came to the Lord. That is our saving grace also. That as soon as we realize we're a little puffed up, we're getting into this distinction, adoration, and profit mentality, we can come and surrender ourselves back to Krishna, back to the authority representing Krishna, and ask him for guidance. Because the devotee of the Lord, it describes here, that the devotee of the Lord, he becomes even higher than the Brahmana. He becomes the Vaishnava. The Brahmana, he cannot see, because generally the Brahmana, he is, what? Looking at this Brahman realization. He does not see. He studies the Vedas and he comes to this platform and he's unable to see the personality of Godhead. He becomes confused, you see, unless he's properly directed himself. It describes, Prabhupada describes that in these purports, how that the Brahmana, that are the devotee of the Lord, he becomes higher than the Brahmana. Therefore, he is not interested in performing any of these ritualistic activities. He's interested in service to the Supreme Lord, just like Krishna was teaching the cowherd men in Vrindavan. So, in order to get the necessities of life in the age of Kali Yuga, it is not so much recommended to worship the demigods. It says that the demigods are worshipped by persons who are less intelligent. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. Let's qualify that a little bit, because less intelligent doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have intelligence. What it means is they're accepting benefits from their service which are temporary, And only a foolish person will accept temporary benefits when they can get permanent benefits by the same activity. So therefore, they're described as less intelligent. You can do the very same activity. You have to cook bhoga. You have to eat. You can offer it to the demigods, or you can offer it to Krishna. One will get you temporary benefit, which will bind you to this material world, because then you're indebted to him. Or one can give you permanent benefit, which will liberate you from this world. So then you take a look and you say, well, the less intelligent guy will get something that's going to bind him to these threefold miseries. Only the intelligent person would think about getting freed from these threefold miseries by the same activity, just change of consciousness. So therefore, they're called less intelligent because they continue to make this choice. Isn't it? So the devotee of the Lord, he's considered more intelligent because he accepts sacrifice directly to Krishna. Many of you are businessmen, or your fathers were businessmen. You know, if you're going to make any real profit, you have to cut out what? The middleman. You cut the middleman right out. So if we can cut the middleman out, we can go from directly to the source, Krishna. The profits are much greater. You see? And you don't have to worry that the middleman is stealing your money. You see, or stealing more than his share of the profits. So the devotee of the Lord, again, is more intelligent. He goes directly to Krishna, cuts out the middleman, goes directly to Krishna. We know that we don't go directly to Krishna in the sense that I can skip over the guru parampara, but we go directly to his devotee who connects us to him, and that direct connection is there. I'm not saying that you can cut out the middleman, meaning the guru parampara. That's, see, because you cannot connect to the Supreme Lord without his bona fide representative. And in one sense, we see that's what demigod worship is. That's what demigod worship is. You're going to the Supreme Lord because he says all sacrifices are meant for me. He says that, but what happens is you get indebted to the demigod and it starts this cycle. So we want to change that. So we go to the Guru Parampara, who's a transparent via media to Krishna. You see? So we can go directly to Krishna through that media. You see? We can go directly to Krishna. We don't get bound to this world. They sever the knots of this Hridaya Granthe. They cut these knots in the heart. Whereas one who worships a demigod starts to tie more knots in the heart. In one sense, they're becoming freed. In another sense, they're becoming bound. They're becoming bound. Just like the statement of why the devotees of Lord Shiva, who has nothing, who sits in crematoriums, he's covered with ashes, he has nothing. Yet his devotees are very opulent, isn't it? And then the devotees of Lord Krishna, Krishna has everything, and his devotees are generally not so opulent. They're not so opulent in general. So, I won't tell that whole story, but the conclusion is that which appears to be a benediction by worshiping Lord Shiva, Parvati is the wife of Lord Shiva. She's also the goddess of the material world. So she, if you're pleasing her husband, she will give you everything. Yeah. But what appears to be like a benediction really is a curse, because the more she gives you, the more entangled into the material world you become. Where Krishna, who is offering no material benefits, because his affection for you is that he wants you out of this material entanglement. You see? Then you might say, well, what about the people that really are making a lot of money and they're devotees? And, you know, look at the Pandavas. Krishna gave them the whole world. Krishna gave them the whole world. He didn't like them? No. Srila Prabhupada said that about us, too. He said, Krishna is prepared to give you the world in 18 days, but you're not ready. The Pandavas were ready. They didn't become confused. Sudama Brahman, remember Sudama Brahman? Childhood friend of Krishna's, went to Gurukul with him, Sandapani Muni school. They had such wonderful childhood pastimes. They were lost in the forest together overnight. They were embracing each other to keep warm, shaking from the cold. When his wife and asked him, please go, we are so poor, can you go see your friend Krishna? He is so opulent in Dwarka with so many palaces. Just get a little something. He said, no, I can't ask for my friend. So finally, because he was looking at his neighbors, the neighbors and his wife, you know, they were so poor. Think about this. You know what chip rice is or flat rice, right? It's very cheap, right? His wife had to go to 5 neighbors to get a handful of chip rice so she could send as a gift to Krishna. 5 neighbors. She wrapped it in his wrapper and he carried it, went to Krishna. He met with Krishna. He went into the palace. He saw Krishna sitting on the bed being fanned by the goddess of fortune, Rukmini. The palace was so opulent, marble pillars and great archways. So very nice. Sat on this bed. The sheets and pillows were like clouds of milk. And Krishna placed him there, worshipped him. Goddess of fortune now is fanning him. Krishna is bathing his feet, sprinkling the water on his own head for purification. He's doing like that. Then he snatches the wrapper. You know the story. I'm just kind of skipping through it. But at that time, then Krishna sat with him all night talking about their childhood pastimes. And then Krishna said, did you bring something for me? Sudama put his head down because he was embarrassed that he had this chip rice. And Krishna snatched the wrapper off his shoulder, took one grain, put it in his mouth. And it's stated that when Krishna took that one grain of rice from Sudama's wrapper, that the whole creation became satisfied. The whole creation became satisfied. Why? Why? One grain of rice? What's that verse? Patram pushpam palam toyam. Krishna said, you can offer me some fruit, some flowers, some water, leaf. I think it was Devamrita Swami was talking about this the other day. But how to offer it? With love and devotion, and I will accept. Because of the love and devotion of his dear friend, Krishna accepted this. And from that love, from Sudama, Krishna became completely satisfied. Not with dry chipped rice. It was soaked with love. It was soaked with love of Sudama. And we know what happened after Sudama left. He went back to his village. In that village, he was looking. He was thinking, what is this place? As he's walking up, it looked like the demigod planet had landed there. Even his neighbors looked like demigods now. And his little wife, who was so skinny, just like he was, from doing such austerities, came out and all of her beauty was there. He was stunned and she bowed down on the road before her husband and she looked at her husband. And with her eyes, she drew her husband deep into her heart and embraced him. And she invited her husband into their new palace. And they went into the palace, and the palace had onyx floors you could see yourself in. Big pillars and archways and beautiful couches and beds. And Sudama, he was thinking, how has this happened? How has this happened? And he thought, oh, my friend Krishna, he must have did this. Is that outside or is that someone's phone? There should be a sign on the wall. If it's not God calling, then turn it off, you know. Right? We don't receive calls in the temple room except from Krishna. All right? So Sudama, think about it. If you came home and you lived in a little shack, and then all of a sudden you're in this palace, how are you going to act? Now, sometimes I tell this story and I think, how am I going to act? I'm going to jump on the couches, you know, start yahoo, you know, I'm going to be jumping from couch to bed, jumping around, you know, so happy. Look at this place. And I'm going to be thinking, how can I enjoy this place? You know, we'll have big parties here and we'll have... But Sudama, because he was a devotee of the Lord, he never thought like that. He immediately thought, oh, my dear Krishna, my friend Krishna has done this. How can I offer it back to him? What can I do to make this an offering to him? That's the devotee of the Lord. That's why the devotee of the Lord, he's even higher than the Brahmins. Because he's always absorbed in how can I offer to Krishna with love and devotion. How can I prepare this as a loving offering to Krishna? That's why Sudama was so dear to Krishna. Because that's what his meditation was all the time. Even though he sees this huge palace, he wasn't thinking, now I can relax. I can get off that cold, damp floor and I can sleep in this bed. He never thought like that. How can I offer this to Krishna? See, that's our business as Vaishnavas, as devotees of the Lord. And so at the end of this purport, Srila Prabhupada talks about all the sacrifices that have to be performed back to the demigods for rains, for this, for that, because they're supplying. They're supplying. But they're all coming from Krishna. So Prabhupada's pointing out here that actually Krishna himself, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham Sarvasya Prabhupada, so many places it talks about everything comes from Krishna. Right? Ishapanishad even warns us, you know, that Ishavasyam idam sarvam jatkincha jagatcham jagat. You know that. You can know all the verses. I don't know any verses, but you guys know all the verses. But that in that verse, tena chakjena bunjita. What is that? There's a quota set aside for you. We know everything belongs to Isha, but there's a quota set for you. But you don't take more than your quota. Why? Because it belongs to Ma. Magridakashashvidanam. It belongs to Krishna. You don't take it because it's his. And whatever he gives you, you take and prepare and offer to him as an offering. Then your life becomes satisfied, peaceful. You don't become a thief. So Prabhupada said, how do you do that in the age of Kali Yuga? You try this, you offer your bhoga, you establish a little deity. But what's the best method for performing jagya in the age of Kali Yuga? You know? I'll read this, what Prabhupada says. He said, he talks about a society of thieves can never be happy. And he said, the gross materialists, they're not happy because they're absorbed in sense gratification. They get a big palace, they want to enjoy it. Nor do they have knowledge how to perform jagyas. Do you know how to do a fire jagya? Anybody in this room know how to do a fire jagya? Where you can light the fire with a mantra? Can anybody do that? Remember, Kamsa had the same plan Hiranyakasipu had. Kamsa's plan was to disturb all of the brahmanas. The brahmanas couldn't do jagya anywhere. They were hiding in caves. The Yadu dynasty were hiding in caves. Everyone was hiding from these demons of Kamsa. And the fires could not be lit. And when Krishna appeared, remember when Krishna appeared, immediately the fire spontaneously lit. The brahmanas were able to do jagya by the appearance of Krishna. They were able to do jagya because their minds became peaceful by the presence of the Lord. Even though the Lord is here in so many forms, we are not so peaceful. So here it says, however, Lord Chaitanya inaugurated the easiest performance of jagya, namely the Sankirtan jagya. Because our minds are too disturbed to light fires. Our minds are too disturbed to sit down and meditate. Our minds are even too disturbed to do elaborate deity worship. It takes a lot to be there for 7 offerings a day, 7 artiks a day. Bathing the deity in the morning, dressing them, taking their clothes off at night, putting them to bed, preparing everything, and to do it with great pomp and glory. Very difficult. Very difficult. Ask anyone who's been a pujari for some years. And we used to have one pujari on our bus when we did traveling Sankirtan, Radha-Damodar bus party. And that pujari did all the artiks and all the offerings. And he'd be here all day in the bus. We had 5 artiks a day, and we would bathe and dress the deities in the morning, and at night we'd change their clothes and put them to bed at night. Whole temple program. And sometimes we sent a cook on Sankirtan. Actually, almost every day. But the cook went out. So then, in the afternoon for the 4 o'clock offering, the pujari even had to prepare that offering. We would give some whipped cream, and so he had to mix all that cream, you know, and whip it up and make it fluffy, and we have fruits and sweets, and he had to prepare all that for the Lord, and then do the offering, and then the artik, and so he wouldn't go crazy. He also had a day that he had to go on Sankirtan all day long, sometimes 2 days, and someone else would do that pujari work, because it's so difficult. Because what happens is, but the individual sometimes puts it on automatic pilot, if you know what I mean. Instead of going in with this awe and reverence and lying down the offering very nice and in your mind making prayers to the Lord as you come in, we just come in, we walk in very quickly, and we kind of put the plate down, and we throw the pillows down, and we sit down, and we say the ring, 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 and then we get up and we go. That what happens is we're failing sometimes to recognize that we're sitting right there in front of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is his bogue, and we're trying to give it to him. Huh? So in order to remind you of who you are and in your relationship, you go out and you cleanse your mind and cleanse your heart in the bath of this Sankirtan Jugya. And then you can come back and sit with the deity and your mind. Sometimes, I know devotees, they will even wear the same cloth. You know, they'll take it off and lay it up there. We never ate in it. But, you know, you wore it, you sweat in it, you should wash it, but they'll put that same cloth back on and come back on the altar thinking it's clean again. It's not clean anymore. You sweated in it, you see. But we do these things because we fail to see that intimate position we're in. So the Sankirtan Jagya, even though deity worship for us is so important, because if we don't do deity worship, we won't know what to do. So this deity worship and preaching has to go side by side, it describes. But we also, everyone should do this Sankirtan Jagya, because that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends. No matter if you're the president or whether you're the pujari, the cook, you should go out and do Harinam. At least a little bit. Go to the corner, stand for an hour or two and chant with a couple devotees and pass out a few books. No problem. Come back. B.V. Madhava Maharaj, you know him? He used to be Mahamantradas. Now he's B.V. Madhava Maharaj. His service, he took care of the deities. And he would get up in the morning, he would bathe and dress the deities, he would wake the deities, offer the sweet, do the Mangal Artik, afterwards bathe and dress the deities. Afterwards then he would get up very early and chant some rounds, and after that breakfast Artik, he would chant some more rounds, and then he would prepare for the Rajbhog, he would do the Rajbhog offering, the Artik. And then as soon as that artik was over, he would run upstairs, change his clothes, and go out on Sankirtan. And he'd stay on Sankirtan. He would try to get someone to do the 4 o'clock offering for him, and then he could stay out later. But if he couldn't, he would come back right away, take shower, put on his dhoti, come down, do the offering, do the artik like that. Every single day he was going out. And he collected all the money to build the Sringasan for the deity, to buy the clothes for the deity, to buy the silver for the deity, to buy the jewelry for the deity. He did it all by his Sankirtan collections. Yet He did all the service to the deity all day long. And he would go out too. He was an amazing personality. If you ever meet him, you'll know. You know him? Special. Some people think, wow, he's a little eccentric. He's absorbed, is what. He's a very rare individual. He is very, if you want to know anything about the gopas, he can take you to places you've never thought you could go. He's so, if you want to know about Tulsi Maharani, he also served Tulsi Maharani so intimately. He knows all the intimate details of, he can tell you so many wonderful stories of, he's a very rare individual. Don't judge a book by the cover, they say. He is very special, very, very special individual, and did so much service. One time, a devotee was very upset because he took some Sankirtan collections and bought Bhoga for the deity, that he pushed him. He pushed Maha Mantra. And Maha Mantra lost his balance and fell right out the window on the second floor. But the screen was in the window and caught him and held him there because he was saying, I did it for the deities. And he went out the window. And then the devotees pulled him back in. He was stuck outside. The devotees pulled him back in. And even the devotee who pushed him, they were all upset. Sometimes in our passion, we do things. Krishna has protected him in many, many ways. He's nice, Tiki Brahmachari. He's very nice. So this complete absorption from the Sankirtan. He went on Sankirtan for many, 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 many years. Many years. So this Sankirtan Yajna is the proper performance in the age of Kali Yuga. I think I'm way over my time here. I didn't want to go into a long Sankirtan talk because that's what I've been doing. Because the next few verses are, they really get into the Harinam, Harinam, Harinam Eva. You know, it's very nice verses, so I'll leave that for the other devotees. But you should try to understand now in this month of December, if you go out, carry with you one book in your pocket or in your bag, wherever you go, whomever you meet, simply ask them to chant Hare Krishna and give them one book. Ask them for donation. Because this is the way we reestablish this Brahminical culture. There was one devotee, his name was Vamanadev. He was my first temple president when I joined. And I love him even now. He was like my father. He was very nice to me, you know, to all the devotees. The temple was just like a family. And before, he had intimate association with Srila Prabhupada, and he always had some scheme. He was a very good carpenter and very good with his hands, and he got a job in the hospital as a head maintenance man to help support and buy the first temple in St. Louis. But he always had these plans, and one time he asked Prabhupada, he said, Srila Prabhupada, I want to join the Air Force. Prabhupada said, why? He said, Prabhupada, I can learn some skills there, you know, and I can learn some skills in the Air Force, and they'll pay for me to learn these skills. Prabhupada said, no, you are the Brahmana. You preach to those who have the skills, and they will work for us. We need Brahmana. There are no Brahmanas in this society. So we must become the head. There is no head in this society. And the way to establish the head in society is this Sankirtan Yajna, you see? To cleanse our heart. We are the hope for society. We are the hope that society can get ahead. There's plenty of Shudras out there. Almost everybody's a Shudra. Actually, in the age of Kali Yuga, everyone is less than Shudra. Huh? But we can engage people according to the scripture, according to the plan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, according to the plan of Krishna. But if we are not purified enough and understand who is Krishna, then we will be doing demigod worship. Then we will be engaging in ritualistic activities. Even we'll go on Sankirtan to try to become the number one. That's why I like going to Dadar Station. You go to Dadar Station, there's Juhu temple, for myself, there's Juhu book tables, there's Chopadi book table, so I can go to this table, I can sell some books. I can go to that table and sell some books. I can go to this table and sell some books. And my score never, no one ever knows what I distributed. Then I don't have to say, well, I think I was number one at that table today. You know, the scores are collected. The scores are collected. This is a very nice temple you have here because we're very fortunate in this temple. I was talking with one brahmachari yesterday about how that he was referring to one devotee, a godbrother of mine, who just left his body. And he said that that devotee distributed books to maintain himself, that he was independent. He said, how is it that there's an independent brahmachari? And I said, sometimes in the West it is very difficult. We don't have the shelter you have here in Chopadi Temple. Chopadi Temple is a very special place. There are very few places like this where the brahmacharis are completely protected. Even the householders are trained in such a way they do not come and talk to the brahmacharis about household life. They will not come and talk to the brahmacharis about business life. Isn't it? They come and they associate with the brahmacharis about shastra and activities in the temple like that. Not about material life. You're protected because there's a head here. This society has a head. And because it has a head, the women are protected. The brahmacharis are protected. The old persons are protected. Because there's a head to this society. We must make more heads so that we can protect more brahmacharis, more women, more children, more old people, more cows. And that's done by this process of Sankirtan Yajna. Here it says, however inaugurated, the easiest performance of Yajna, namely the Sankirtan Yajna, which can be performed by anyone in the world who accepts the principles of Krishna consciousness. We simply have to accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Accept the Guru Parampara as our authority. There's nobody in this community practically who has no authority, isn't it? Everyone has a counselor system, because they're protected. In the West, you don't find so much protection. Devotees are on their own, trying to struggle just to come to the temple, just to live in the temple, just to maintain. Here you're very fortunate. You should definitely understand your fortune. You have great fortune here. Now Prabhupada said, I have made you fortunate. Now you must go make others fortunate. You must create now more fortune for the people of Bombay. Because as we spread throughout Bombay, then we can spread throughout India. And that is our business with the Sankirtan Yajna. One who has sufficient intelligence will engage in the Sankirtan Yajna in the age of Kali. They'll worship the Panchatattva. They'll see Krishna in these five features. And they'll accept Guru Parampara, back to Krishna, as you cleanse your heart. Maybe this class is a little disjointed because I'm a little disjointed today, so I apologize. And now I think I'll let you go on the Sankirtan Yajna. Some people have already gone out early this morning. They're loading trucks and cars, sneaking out in the dark, setting up their position to attack Maya. In the military, you'll go and you'll set up some night ambush. And you'll be in the dark in the night and you're waiting for the enemy to come. Right? And then you blow the ambush on them. So we're like that. We send out our Sankirtan men. They're setting up near the train stations, near the bus stations, on the platforms, in the trains. Three boys were in the trains yesterday. They were making announcements, and each of them did 30 books each, Maha Big Books. On the train, they're saying, so, you know, oh, we're safely on the train, all those people on the platform. We didn't have to buy that Bhagavad Gita. Hello, people of Bombay, we are here on the train with the Bhagavad Gita for you to take. And oh no, there they are again. See, and then they take. They're everywhere. You see, they cannot escape. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's plan. They cannot escape. Some people escape Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You cannot escape. You're on the train. You're in the bus. That's our plan. See, when you go to the sabji market and the lady standing next to you and you're talking to her and then out of your bag, she thinks you have sabji in there, you pull Bhagavad Gita. Here, let me show you something about how we glorify the person who gave us these sabjis. You see? And you can give her a Bhagavad Gita. That will be your attack on Maya. You can sneak up on them. Here you go. You see, like that. Give them a book. We must make a plan. The plan must be there to save all these people from this wicked place. This place is so wicked. Isn't it painful? Yesterday I was at Dadar Station and I came to the realization there are a lot of blind people in Bombay. Not just spiritually blind, literally blind. Isn't it? Anybody who stands on that platform in Dadar, you see them. Like every 5 minutes, one or two blind people go by. They're bumping into you and poking you with the stick. And it's like, wow, so many blind people, so many blind people. What is this? Karma. So much karma in this place. Now it's our business to open their eyes. But it doesn't matter what they have in there. There may not be anything in there. We'll just rub a little prema, premanjana, the ointment of prema. They'll see Krishna. Bilva Mangala Thakur saw Krishna. He didn't have any eyes. He saw Krishna. He poked his eyes out. So now it's our business to anoint these people's eyes with this love of Godhead. That's our business. To open their eyes, to find those blind people and rub a little prema in their eye. You know? That should be one of our next projects, producing Bhagavad Gita in Braille. You know? Huh? Why not? Or maybe we can carry Bhagavad Gita on CD out there. You can listen to this Bhagavad Gita. We want to give you I can't see. How can I read? No, no, you have ears. You take this. You receive the spiritual master not with your eyes, but with your ears. You perceive Krishna not by with your eyes, but with your ears. You hear the glories of the Lord. You see Him through the Shastra. That's our business, to go out and be merciful to these persons who are so unfortunate. So unfortunate. So you are fortunate here. Krishna has made you fortunate. Now you go and make others fortunate. Shri Krishna Sankirtan ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Evil.